Bienvenue sur Just a Click, le podcast français du product management. Ici, on parle de tech, de design et de business. Je suis Thierry Michel et j'accueille chaque semaine des leaders du monde du digital. Ici, vous trouverez des retours d'expérience, des conseils et apprentissages concrets pour progresser en product management. On dit que seul, on va vite, mais sur Just a Click, on prend le temps ensemble d'aller loin. Hello, Rohini.
Thanks. Hello, Daddy.
Thanks for taking the time today to talk about product management and with the specific line of what happens when you go from in a startup from a seed to actually Series A, Series B, etc. So basically what happens when you grow from a very small team to a bit more structured team in an international context. So the idea will be to discuss with you about these topics. Thanks to the experience you've gone through up so far in product management. But before we start, can you present yourself and present the company you're working for today?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. So like you mentioned, I'm Rohini and I've been building products since my computer science engineering days. And back then I was even running a campus startup and we were doing pretty well. But then the problem... We could agree on the problem, me and my customers, but we never could agree on the solution. So back then, I thought that was a lack of business education. And that's how I came to France. I did my master's in LSEC, SEGI. And then I discovered that, okay, this gap is actually product management. And that kickstarted my career here. My last experience was with CoinHouse, where I saw it grow from Series A to Series B in a very rapid span of time. And along with it, the scope of my role in product also evolved. So it evolved over 4 times. And I was running the first ever squad of CoinHouse, where we were in charge of diversifying revenue by building financial products. And we ended up adding like millions of euros in asset under management. So that was really fun. And I then decided to switch gears and I started working at Koala. So here we are a seed stage startup ready to raise a Series A. So right now we are focusing on building a repeatable and a scalable business model. So our focus is, you know, strengthening the product market fit that we think we've found. So that's about it.
Very clear. And so what's the actual product that you're proposing at the moment at Koala?
So Koala is a travel insurance startup. So essentially what we do is we want to be able to tell every traveler who travels that without paperwork, without any hassle, they should be free to change their plans around because, you know, it's 2024 and we want to be able to afford that freedom to them. So right now we are B2B2C. So we work with a wide range of players, a lot of big travel providers and all of that to ensure that our customers get access to these products.
Okay, very, very clear. And so in terms of the size of the team at the moment, if you were to break it down between the tech team, the product team, the sales, like how, and overall, how many people?
Right. I think Koala is somewhere between 10 to 15 off the top of my head. I don't have an accurate number. So in product, I'm the first product manager. So I work with my CEO directly. And in tech, we have a CTO and about 7 to 8 engineers in the team. And then we have other departments, which are sales and operations. We have 2 of them now. So that's been very helpful.
Okay, very, very clear. So in terms of how we're going to split the discussion, you were mentioning before we started recording, to split the discussion between one part, which is will be business, and another part, which will be people and processes, right, in terms of basically the differences when you start to go from seed to something like Series A, and when you scale the team, basically. So if we start with business, what will be for you the main differences that you've experienced between what you saw at CoinHouse during the scale, right, as well and today?
Yeah, so I think within business, maybe it's more accurate to think of it as, you know, strategically, what does it matter as a product manager? So I actually made a list of like 3 things within business. So I think the first thing is, you know, as a product manager, we always want to know the why behind what we're solving for. So that is my first point, which is when we are in seed, then, you know, we're really trying to find the product market fit to see, you know, we feel we've found it, but have we really? So that's the question that we're trying to answer. And by the time we get to Series A, we know, hopefully, that we have our product market fit. So now we know who likes us and what they want from us. So now how do we take it further? And that's the primary question you're asking. So you're strengthening it and bolstering it. But by the time you get to Series B, you already have all of this in place. But now you also need to think about like other key drivers like revenue. So what is that going to look like? And also in terms of, you know, the things we were competing. So that is leads me to my immediate next point. Maybe I can come to that, which is competitive positioning. So in general, you know, when we're trying to position ourselves, irrespective of which phase of the which phase the company is in, we want to make sure that, you know, we have like a strategic line of thinking, like, you know, how do we stand out amongst so many other startups there are and reach out to those customers so we can provide the right value without wasting resources and all of that. And that's going to feed into the priority as well. When you are in series, when you're in seed, maybe we can start there. You really niche down. You know, there's this one specific thing that I'm going to be so good at that there's no one who's going to come near me. And I can afford to do that because I'm really small and because I can't afford to do everything else. So then how can I, you know, start here? So in Series A, I'm trying to capitalize on these niche and, you know, to get as many people as I can who will pay money to, you know, build on these niche. But as soon as I get to Series B, then this niche is not good enough because there are so many big players. And like we saw in the goal, the things that, you know, we would have cut previously are now bare minimum to even compete in. So now at the same time, we're building all the things that is considered bare minimum we must have. And we should also think about, you know, what other goals can we add? How am I going to switch my strategic positioning to also do a million other things that our customers want? So I think it the level of complexity, like, you know, shoots up drastically. And the other part is product complexity and, you know, tech debt. So when I am in a seed, then my primary concern is with, you know, one or two key products, and they are not necessarily like, you know, a portfolio. Like, I'm not thinking in terms of like, oh, how would it impact? Like, you know, would I cannibalize my market? And those are questions that I don't have yet. So it's really, you know, I'm trying to see how I can improve these products and take it to as many people as possible. Whereas by the time I come to Series B, we are dealing with a full portfolio. Like, you know, in my squad, when we were working in, we had to also do like this product and that product and that product. But they are all focusing on, you know, financial products. So they all have different users according to us. But there is also an overlap in how do I make sure that all the users in this company know which ones are tailored for them. And how do I handle that complexity when there are so many developers looking for it, and which part of those products get prioritized next? So I think those are kind of the complex questions that, you know, we deal with. So I think business-wise, strategically, there's a lot more focus where you go from a lot of operational work to a lot of strategic work. And I don't mean that C does not have strategic work, but I think the weight of the strategic decisions like really change over time.
Very interesting. So I'd like to come back to what you you explained at the beginning, which is basically when you're very small, so in seed, you have to focus on a very specific customer.
Yes.
And then when you start to grow, you have to grow the customer base and the people Absolutely. You want to reach. And at the same time, if you have other products that you want to develop, you have to make sure that it's very clear which vertical you're going to address with each product without having them kind of take some customer from one product to another product, which will be part of
the
same company. So as a product manager, what are the key learnings in terms of the skill set that you've developed so far for you that are very important for this stage of the business when you focus on a very specific customer versus what you've had to learn to go from seed to series A, series B?
It's actually a really great question, and I'm thinking as you are asking me. So I think for seed, more than any other phase, it's very ruthless prioritization because there are so many people who see so much potential in the company that they want to go in all of these directions. And I completely see that, you know, passion. And of course, nobody would work in a startup if they didn't want that. But unless we say, okay, absolutely not. Like, you know, for now, this is the only place I will focus on. And this is the only thing that I will be an expert on before everything else. So I think that is a skill that, you know, both for product managers and for everyone else is very key to have, to know exactly where you're going. And I think one thing that I've noticed that kind of added a lot of value is having more clarity on product market fit. I think over time, even, you know, with me, I found that, you know, it became vague. Like, what exactly does that mean? And, you know, how do I get it? So it helped to go down to the fundamentals and say, well, you know, where is the market and where are my customers now? Because, you know, when I think when they hire a product manager, they're not starting from scratch. You know, it's still in seed, but it's not scratch. So I already know that there are some people buying it. So who are these customers and what problems are they trying to solve? And where are the other similar customers? And why did they choose us over other players within the market who have like a whole bunch of things? So once you put this together, I think it becomes evident, you know, exactly where your focus should be. And then all that matters is like putting your head down and making sure that, you know, we keep testing all of these hypotheses.
Very clear. So I'd like to say with my own words what you just said, and right. you stop me if I'm wrong, but it's basically, as a first PM joining a seed startup, one of the focus you should have is like to really understand who are the customers that you already have traction in and understand how you can capitalize on that to kind of build upon it. And at the same time, becoming more and more clearer about the vision of the company that you should push for, so that you can catalyze the energy that is coming from all of the different stakeholders within the company towards one same direction.
I think you summarized it like perfectly. I think, you know, I should mention like one pitfall or caveat, which is sometimes what happens is, especially when we are in a B2B context. So I see that, you know, it's tempting to do what, you know, when we're focusing on one customer, to focus on our biggest customer and to do all the customizations they would want. So while I do mean it when I say we need to focus on who our customers are and niche it down, I don't mean that, you know, it's one customer and we give them what they want. So we still have the control over the product vision while also balancing, you know, this part out. So yes, that's about what we learned in seed.
Very clear. And so in terms of then going from that point to Series A, Series B, what are the key changes in the mindset of the product manager that you've experienced so far? So let's say that now the seed stage has led to reaching mm-hmm. like Series A, Series B. What did you learn going from there to Series A, Series B as a first PM?
So I think we are in the process of going to Series A. So I think now the key focus is to make sure we dot our, you know, I's and cross our T's, because I think we have like something that's working and we have an assumption, a hypothesis of why it's working. But what we want to be able to do is make sure it's provable, one, to help with the fundraising and everything, but also to say, well, now I can replicate it for these customers under these customers, under these conditions. How can I replicate it for these customers under a different set of conditions? For example, can I change the way I sell and still make sure that these type of customers come in? So, you know, ultimately it's just about two things. One is, you know, what can I do to increase my revenue and what can I do to cut down my costs? So within the scope of the thing that I've niched down on, I want to be able to check these two. So in this context, perhaps it is, you know, cutting down, you know, all the outbound calls, unless it's a very big partner. Or, you know, if I'm increasing the revenue, then for these specific partners, what is the specific product or, you know, an integration that they're looking for so I can make more money. So I think that is where, you know, the immediate next point of growth would be.
Very, very clear. So then if we move to the second part.
So I think now we'll discuss Series B. So in this scenario, I think things get way more complex. So at least for me, it was a very startling experience because I still brought the first mindset of Series A, which is I was very drilled down on that specific product that I was releasing. But I think eventually, you know, we'll learn to lift our heads up and look at the broader context. So the moment we have like one, you know, you at that point, you're also working with a lot of different product managers, right? Who all have their own goals. So it's important to keep in mind, you know, how that would play into, you know, the decisions we make. But within my own scope, it quickly became that I was managing like a portfolio of products. So then what happens is I need to have a better grasp of a longer horizon compared to the previous ones, because previously I'm only focusing on, well, this needs to work. But in a Series B, I'm thinking more like, you know, within the next 1 year, this is the goal I want to reach. and I want to be able to do XYZ, catering to, you know, ABC customers. So in that case, I need to have like a very solid relationship with, you know, the tech holder, the tech leader. Of course, it holds true for everything else. But in this case, you know, you would expect them to, you know, step up with you and be, you know, your partner throughout, because you are thinking way ahead of where the team is. So I think that one is very critical. And I think the other part is also an issue that I faced was, you know, the role became extremely complex and strategic, that, you know, you are less and less available with your team in the sprint plannings and everything. So how do you balance, you know, keeping track of that with this? So, you know, you have to build trust within the team. And I think we can talk about that in the people section, but I just wanted to mention it nonetheless.
Yeah, for sure. So in this part, and it's going to be a good transition for the people section. What I found interesting on what you say is basically you go from a role of PM, which is very hands-on, very focusing also on delivering value, to something where you take a bit more of a step down to get more on the strategic part.
Right.
And so, as you said, like it your role as a PM will change, or also how the team sees you will change.
Absolutely.
And you have to do this transition, which is not easy, because your team needs to continue being autonomous on delivering the value, and you need to take a step back. So it can be a tricky topic. How did you experience that? Maybe in your previous experience, what are the key learnings you've had that if you were to redo it, you will do it this way, or the things that you've learned worked well for this transition?
So I think maybe I'll start with, you know, the first question that you asked, which is, you know, what are the changes? So I think in Seed, we are a lot more scrappy. Like, you know, you do the work of multiple other people, even though you have no idea what you're doing. Suddenly you're like a designer in one day. But I think when you're coming to Series B, you have like a lot more specialization within the team. You have QAs and, you know, all of these different DevOps and all of these specialties you don't have before. So I think it also adds a complexity in that there are multiple heads within the same thing. And also what changes is, you know, if you remember the structure of the team I was telling you about, for Seeds, the external teams are also smaller, and, you know, it's very easy to talk to them and, you know, make a change. Whereas in Series B, other teams are also growing. So in that case, my stakeholders multiply, you know, exponentially, and I need all of their buy-in to make things move. So it's quite complex that way, because each of those teams have their own priorities, because there are so many other product teams, and all of those product teams are troubling them for the answers that I want. So I think all of those are like complexities that we add. And in terms of like what my learnings would be, especially in terms of scaling, is I think what mistakes I've made at the beginning was not realizing that there were other teams who were competing for the same resources, because we have one marketing team, one finance team, and so on. So I think what really helped was making sure that, you know, the company's strategy was clear for all of us. So when I spoke to those teams, it would also always come from a place of, well, you know, I see you have all of this, but then this is important because we want to release XYZ, and that's going to add like so much revenue to you. And once that goal is clear, then everyone kind of wants to do that, right? And I got very lucky that I was in a lucrative section, because, you know, once you say, well, you're making like X amount with this product, then everyone's like, it's tangible, it's exciting. So I don't know what I would do if I were, you know, in a different department. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Yeah, when you're like the, how could we say that, when you're the kind of the star of the company, or like the team that makes something that
yes,
it's easier to get also the cross-functional
buying,
and the buying of the cross-functional teams. Very interesting. So I think it's good transition to go through the aspect of people and processes.
Yes.
The same between Seed and Series A, Series B. So
I think to carry over with the processes, so I think what changed was with Seed, you are still discovering who you are as a company and, you know, what works for you. So almost very frequently we are changing, you know, the development processes, or, you know, how we work with the sales and so on. So it's very much learn as you go and all of that. Whereas in a Series A, you're a bit more stable because there is some base process that everyone agrees on. It works. So it's such a peaceful place to be in once you're in Series A. But Series B once again becomes a bit of a war zone, because at that point, every single process you have is revamped, because, you know, it's just the complexity multiplies, right? You're dealing with a big portfolio. There are specialties added in. And there are other teams as well. So you are rewriting the process over and over. And I think a crucial thing is risk gets distributed. So sometimes what can happen is things can get missed in the crack because, you know, this is something that marketing should have looked at. This is something that finance should have looked at. But as a product manager, you are like responsible for the entire product, at least as I see it, from the beginning until it's released and out and I'm making money from it. It's all, you know, my responsibility. So in that case, then, you know, you have to remember a lot of things so that things don't fall in the cracks. And that gets quite hard because there are so many people and, you know, things keep changing rapidly. So I think that's quite a drastic change in processes for me.
And so on this last part, that what are the key learnings or tips or things that you've learned on the way, like that you found were useful in terms of managing all of these dependencies and making sure that everything is on track when you don't have a direct control and everything, but at the end you have, as you said, like the responsibility.
So I think the very first thing that you know is assuming, you know, giving people the benefit of doubt that everyone is doing their best and they are all coming to the table for, you know, the best of intentions. It's just that I want those best of intentions to be for my product. So I think it's helpful to, you know, focus on like a specific goal, because at the end of the day, everyone wants to make a difference, right? Otherwise, it's not enjoyable. So I think that is like key. Like once you set that and say, you know, you are the agent that's going to help us do all of this, then people automatically are more helpful and they want to prioritize it. So that is like the most important part, and everything else is a footnote. So the other part is the delivery, you know, the actual work that gets done. And this part is, you know, I think what was very important was continuously adapting the processes, but I do not like being bogged down by processes. So I don't want to get into a situation where we are creating hundreds of Notion docs or Excel sheets to track work, because eventually what happens is we get too focused on fine-tuning the processes that we've kind of forgotten what's important. So what really helped me was a lesson my first manager gave me. So what we did was, you know, since we have like a very big product, we broke it down into very small chunks. So this is basically the essence of a story map, but she was the first person to introduce it to me. So we broke it down into small iterations, each one with a functional outcome. So I know that at the end of this, I can see XYZ. So all I need to do is for that specific iteration, what are my blockers? So, and once that is done, then I'm also breaking down the similar concept with all of my, you know, other teams. So if it's marketing, then it's just the same concept. I know I'm releasing like, you know, in April, for example, then, you know, you work backwards and say, I want these small chunks, you know, of course, not every team wants to be managed this way. This is more when things are chaotic and you need like a bit more control, then that really helps.
Yes, the breaking down of two smaller chunks that then become more manageable, even though you have different stakeholders that are involved in them, like it's smaller, so it's easier to manage. Yeah. That definitely makes sense. So on all of these different experiences that you've gone through, we discussed off a bit about the cultural differences also between that are inherent to working in an international team. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to have your point of view on that, especially so you work at the moment for a French company.
Yes.
So what you found interesting that you didn't expect potentially at the beginning working with French people versus working with Americans, Indians, British, I don't know, like what are a bit your point of view on that, and especially in product management. For me, this makes a lot of sense to discuss about this topic, because as product manager, one of our roles is to align people, and so to get the buying of people without direct authority of them, which is even more difficult but more powerful as well when you get it done. So to get that buy-in and to kind of align people, you need to understand how they work, how they think, how they talk. So I'm interested to have your point of view on that.
That's That's such an interesting question that you asked. And, you know, it's something that I constantly revisit and revise because, you know, it is a completely new space for me. I think for me, what has been very jarring was, you know, how feedback is given or how conflict happens. So when I had my first class in ESSEC, I remember it. There was a student who was arguing with a teacher in the middle of the class, and I got the shock of my life. Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, because in India, you don't, you know, you help people save face. So the other person is never wrong in public. So, you know, it was really interesting. And that's when I discovered that French people are taught to argue and learn and think critically. And, you know, it's a normal part of how decisions get made. And that was like super fascinating. And it's something that I've had to make peace with at work. I found that I'm more comfortable getting feedback than giving feedback. So honestly, this is still a place that I have a lot of work to do because I'm extremely anti losing face. So I don't want to tell anybody anything in front of them. So what I've resorted to do is, you know, if I need buy-in, then I talk to everyone individually. So it takes time. But I think it's still helpful because, you know, even if we disagree, then I feel like, well, the other person has a chance to, you know, redeem themselves in front of everyone. And it's not embarrassing for them. And I think that's kind of very important for me. It's a cultural thing that I can't change. So I'm trying to work around it, even though it's a bit more time. And I think another thing that I think is something that's unexpectedly helpful is in India, we're a bit more like communal. So what you do is almost everything you do is like by cajoling everyone and, you know, getting them to come. And you by default, you assume that everyone knows things better than you do. So I think that has kind of helped here because, you know, as a product manager, there are many experts that you work with and sometimes you may agree or disagree with them, but they are the experts in their own industry. You have a point of view about, you know, the product, but, you know, you also incorporate that. So I think it really helps because, you know, what I mean to say is, you know, when I'm communal, I don't mean to say that, you know, this is my opinion and then I fight about it. What I mean to say is I'm going to ask you a lot of questions. And via those questions, I'm going to see what is it that you know that I do not know. And that way, I can also tell you what I'm thinking. So together, it might not look like it, like I'm not directly telling you X is the answer. But via my line of questioning, you come to say that X is the answer. So at the end of the day, it's much more smoother for a buy-in. I don't know if it's clearer because, you know, it's more intuitive in my culture. So I'll let you tell me if it's clearer. If not, I can give an example.
Yeah. So the way I understand it is basically in order to better understand what's in the mind of the other person you're talking with is like to and to know what this person has as a base to kind of consolidate his own opinion mm-hmm. is to try to ask questions to understand where his opinion is built from.
Exactly.
And then from that, you can better understand where he's standing on which kind of basis of argument. And so give your arguments with your basis and then kind of have a more informed discussion.
Absolutely.
Without being completely blind on thinking like, why are you thinking like that? Without understanding what's the thought process behind it.
Yes.
So that's very interesting. Listening to you, I'm also thinking it could be helpful for other product manager or tech leaders or people working in tech that are coming from India or other part of the world, mm-hmm. but that have to work with French like me. What kind of tips you could give them that you found useful or key resource to kind of have a look at in order to help them kind of work with French people that, as you said, like in our culture, for example, we have this kind of arguing inside us, like where sometimes it can be a bit troubling when you're in front of like a face of authority, like a teacher, where coming from a country where you don't challenge that, at least not in front of everyone, seeing that in school,
absolutely.
I can imagine the shock, as you said, that you had. That is very very understandable. But so, what kind of tips could you give to other international people working with French people?
That's such an interesting question. I think the first one is, I think I've. You know, in my head, it feels like so bad to argue with people. But I found that French people find it very welcoming. Like, you know, to them, it's a very normal way of like talking and it's respectable for them. So I think if you are capable of like changing that part of you and, you know, engage in discussion, I think that's super fruitful. But if you are like me and you struggle with it, then I already told you what I did. But I think in other cases, what I found was French people are very, very open to feedback compared to, you know, other people I've worked with, like, you know, from my country. And also, when I say they're open to feedback, I also mean culturally. So here, I think people have tried so hard to be culturally aware. Like, they ask me questions. And when I tell them that, you know, it's a bit difficult to, you know, relate, they kind of see it. Like, once I tell them that, okay, you know, I'm not comfortable, like, you know, saying this in a meeting and disagreeing with you, then they make an effort to follow up after the meeting and be like, oh, were you comfortable with that? And I think that's because French people travel so much, you know. It's not a norm in India to, you know, go on trips as a young person, but here you're more open to exploring things. So I think it really helps to have good relationships with the people you work with. And I think, you know, they're really people you can count on. So it really helps to say that, you know, okay, I need a bit more support on this. And they've always been very kind to work with me, or I've worked with the best French people.
No, very interesting. So thanks for sharing that. I think we did quite of a broad panel of both, like, what it means to work from seed to series A, series B as a first product manager, and then growing the product team. Before I go to, and then talking on second part, a bit more cultural aspect of what it means to work, especially in France. Before I go with my two last questions of the interview, is there any topic you'd like to emphasize, something specific that you feel is missing in this discussion, or something you want to add?
Now that you ask me, I'm thinking that, you know, one pitfall that I saw was, you know, when we're moving from series A to series B, the complexity is exponentially higher than from seed to series A. So what happens is, when there is so much chaos, we start looking for a bit more simpler options. So what we try to do instinctually is do like a copy paste of, you know, what has worked in other companies and so on. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Like, you know, I'm so grateful that there's so much good content available now. But I think maybe as consumers of that content, including me, I think we have to like evaluate it a bit more critically. Like, for example, to say, you know, what problem was this person solving while giving this advice? What environment were they in? What constraints were they limited by? Or, you know, maybe even what criteria they had. And, you know, once we do that, it's much more easier to apply those principles to our company, because I think that helps more than, you know, just going for the final output of that advice. And I think it's, in fact, even more harmful to do this copy paste than completely winging it, because when you're winging it, at least you know you're winging it. So you can course correct and, you know, make those changes than saying, well, that company did it, so it should work for us. So
very, very interesting point. And I see here the PM, the product manager mindset of going behind the surface, basically understanding when you have like some kind of framework or methodology that a company is kind of advertising about or explaining how they structure their team, instead of just saying, okay, that must work, so let's do the same. Yeah. You go behind the surface to understand why did they do that? What was their problem? Do I have the same problem? Or if I don't have the same problem, what kind of problem I have that I can relate to what they have, and then kind of take inspiration from what they did. So very good point, I think. And as always, like frameworks, methodologies, they are there to sometimes start the reflection, start the thought process, but then you have to adapt them to each specific context.
Absolutely.
So very, very clear on that. So now thanks for sharing that. Class. To go to my two last questions. So the first one is, if you have any strong conviction, strong point of view on a topic that you sometimes disagree with your peers when you share it.
It's actually the one I mentioned, because, you know, this is one that I feel very, very strongly about. Because I think now, you know, I think in France, it's not the case. But, you know, in America, you have all of these product management interview frameworks like circles and everything. And it's super helpful when you're starting out to start reflecting in that way. But I feel very strongly that, you know, when you are working, even if it's agile, you know, we should always know why we are doing it, and then we can continue to do it. So I kind of feel really strongly about it. Sorry.
No, very clear. And it's good to emphasize on it. So yeah. I think very interesting. And I shared my point of view just before on that. Yeah. So very clear. And so my last question is, what are like the resources, the key things that you're using to learn to grow as a person, and potentially that are not directly linked to that you make connection with professional world, but it can be resources or inspiration that you get outside of the professional world. The question here is to understand how you think. What are the things that inspires you?
So that's actually a really great question, especially that because you didn't ask for like product management specific resources. So I've been so back when I was in engineering, there's this concept that I learned called, you know, lateral thinking. I don't know how I learned it, so I can't give a source on it. So what happened was traditionally the problems we were solving in computer science were already solved in different formats in a lot of different industries. So it's just that, you know, somebody who has a knowledge of all of this is able to draw principles from that and apply it here. So, and after you nail down the specifics of product management, where you know the core aspects of it, then I think we have to reach out to more, you know, different types of books and resources from different industries. For example, I was reading a book on storytelling and, you know, the science behind it, how humans think and so on. And now I'm reading a book on how buildings learn. So it's like, what changes after, you know, once you build a building, how does it grow? And, you know, you don't think about those things. But then once you do, I think it's really helpful because, you know, somewhere it connects a dot and then you're able to apply it to your own work. So I think, I cannot give you a specific resource because, you know, I try to be as eclectic as I can to go as wide and random. So, and then, you know, it sparks a conversation and then one day you're just going in a rabbit hole.
Yeah, very interesting. What I learned from what you're saying is like basically being eagerly curious, I would say.
That's actually very true. Yeah. You put it better than I did.
No, very, very interesting. So thanks for sharing that again. Thanks for sharing all of your background. If people want to reach out to you, what's the best way to contact you? Is it LinkedIn? Do you have a...
Yes, please. LinkedIn would be great. And, you know, really, thank you so much for having me. And I'm curious to know what people think of this because this is the first time I've done this. So I hope I've made sense.
Thanks, Rohini.
Ça y est, l'épisode est terminé. Si celui-ci vous a plu, vous pouvez me soutenir en laissant une note et un commentaire sur votre plateforme d'écoute préférée. Aussi, n'oubliez pas de vous abonner à l'émission pour être sûr de ne rien manquer. À très bientôt sur Just Click, le podcast français du product management.